Everyone wants to have a beautiful yard, but designing a landscape can be a daunting task. This hour, tips on landscape design and on buying the right plants for your needs. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day. Lisa Orgler is a landscape designer and a lecturer in the Department of Horticulture at Iowa State University. I'll talk with her about creating a yard or garden design and what to look for when it's time to buy the plants. ISU Extension horticulturist Richard Giron will also be here, and he and Lisa will answer your questions about your yard, garden, and landscape. Give us a call. Join the conversation after the news. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today, and it's easy to get excited, maybe even a little overwhelmed when you go plant shopping in the spring. This hour, we'll talk about making a plan and picking the right plants for your landscape. Of course, we'll also be answering your questions later on. Lisa Orgler is here with me now. She's a landscape designer and a lecturer in the Department of Horticulture at Iowa State University. Hello, Lisa.
Hi, Charity. It's nice to be here today.
Yeah, welcome back to the show.
Thank you.
Now, let's talk about making a plan, because I think that that is overwhelming for a lot of us. We may look at our yard or our garden and not necessarily like what it looks like, but it can be really overwhelming with all of the choices out there to make a plan. Where do you start?
Oh, boy. That's a big question. Well, of course, I'm coming from the landscape design profession, and the number one thing that I like to encourage people to do is to not just look at the plantings first, but look at your spaces first. What we do is we do a spatial design first, and then we do a planting design. A spatial design is basically deciding where your rooms should be in your landscape, where the spaces should be. So instead of just buying a plant and then putting it somewhere and being confused about where to put it, decide where do you want your patio to be? Where do you want your lawn space to be? Where do you want your, you know, if there's another area, maybe a utility area that you, where you want that to be. And then the planting beds actually go around those spaces and reinforce them. So it's really thinking about the spaces first and then going to the plants.
And, of course, you have to look at what kind of conditions all of those spaces have, right?
Correct. So when you're first doing the spatial design, you need to have those in the back of your mind, but it's more so important when you get to the plants to make sure you understand, obviously, shade and sun and wet and dry conditions and all of those things.
Do you need to think long term, too, because maybe you have a small tree or shrub somewhere that's going to grow and it's going to create a shaded area, but maybe not for a few years?
Yes, that is very important. And that's actually one of the things that we struggle with the most is, you know, you want a shade garden here in 10 years or 20 years. But in the short term, you may have to do, if you have a small tree, you may have to do some sunny plants first. And then as that tree matures, which could be past our lifetime, it might be the next person that lives at your house, you might have to have a sunny garden first and then transfer it over into a shady garden within, you know, 10 years or so.
Now, when you do look at a space and you know how much room you have, I think it can be easy to get too many plants to put in that space, because if you plant according to directions, there are going to be places that look a little empty for a while. Is that a challenge for a lot of people?
That is a challenge. You know, one of the things that I suggest, if you have a mix of plants in an area, mixing woodies and perennials, for instance, what you could do is put more money into plants that grow slower. So for instance, let's just say you have some evergreens in your design, maybe some shrub evergreens. Maybe you spend a little bit more money and buy larger specimens of those initially because they grow slower. And then maybe the faster growing plants, you can buy smaller ones of those. And then hopefully over the years, things will start to fill in a little faster because of that. If you buy the slow growing plants small and the fast growing plants small, you're going to have this really odd-looking space for a while. And you're right, it's going to be very empty. But maybe you can just grow purchase plants at different times of their growth, and hopefully it'll fill in a little quicker, we can hope.
So when it's time to actually go to the garden center or to place an order, I know a lot of people order things out of catalogs or online as well. How specific do you feel you need to be as far as having that list with you?
If you're lucky enough to go to a garden center, it's sometimes you don't even need to have a list if you just have a general idea. I have some planting tips on my website that talk about, you know, things like that. For instance, if you're going to buy, if you see a plant that you love, and instead of just buying one of it, maybe you can buy several of those, because one of the design elements is thinking about massing plants. So if you can mass plants, it almost looks like you've planned it, even though you may not have planned it, because I know a lot of us like to plant binge. When there's sales, we just like to buy plants, and I do the same thing. So if you don't have a plan, which it'd be nice if you did, but if you don't, at least follow some of those guidelines. And one of them is buying plants and or buying them in odd numbers and massing them. So instead of just buying one of something, maybe you can buy three of them, so it looks like you've actually planned it a little bit.
If you buy all these three, little it tricks. Looks like yeah. a plan.
Exactly. I know. It's so funny because, you know, I even don't even always have a list when I go to the nursery. I know in the back of my mind I've got holes in some of my planting beds and I know I need a certain kind of plant, but I always come across something that I don't think will fit anywhere, but I have to have it. And so sometimes I'll just buy three of them just so if I can squeeze it somewhere, it looks like it was meant to be there and I actually thought about it, which I know is kind of silly, but hey, I bought more plants. It's more of an excuse to buy more plants, I guess.
Wait, I thought maybe we were guarding against buying too many plants.
Oh, that's right. I know you're talking to the wrong person about saying that you shouldn't plant binge, because I do it too.
Now, looking at some of the garden designs that are on your website, you have some really unique designs that you share with people. And I'm curious about that. You know, when you look at the catalogs, there will be, you know, a page where it says, here's a shade garden, and they'll tell you exactly what you need to have in this shade garden and exactly how to set it up. Mm-hmm. But of course, we all want to bring ourselves to this process and our own creativity and what we really love in plants. Do you have some guidelines? I mean, okay, buy three. That's a good guideline. But do you have some guidelines for putting together your plan so that it's going to look good when you get it done?
So are we talking about I'm trying to decide if we're talking about theme gardens or we're just talking about general planting tips still, right?
Yeah.
Because you were mentioning the fun design, so I wanted to make sure. Another design tip that I have is to think about the three elements of planting design, which is form, texture, and color. And I don't want to say the importance of them, but the stability of each of those. Form is more consistent. Texture is the second for consistency, and then color is the third. And we oftentimes put a lot of emphasis on color, even though color only lasts maybe a couple of weeks in the summer, unless the leaves are a certain color, but flowers only last usually a couple of weeks. So if we put more emphasis on form, we will actually have a nice looking garden year round, even when things are not blooming. So for instance, so form would be every plant has some kind of shape to it. So it could be a vase shaped, a round shape, a pyramidal shape, a columnar shape. And when you understand that different plants have different shapes, it's more fun actually to compose, you know, an image of how those plants can go together. And so form is pretty important. The next thing to think about is texture. Texture in the simplest terms is making sure you combine large leaves with small leaves. There's other forms of texture in the branches and all of that also, but in the summer months, it would definitely be the leaves, number one, and then sometimes the flowers, but flowers are fleeting, so I don't put a lot of emphasis on that. So when you go to the nursery, one thing I love doing is pulling plants from the different areas and combining them and making sure the leaves look nice together. I want to make sure I have some large leaves, which are coarse textured, with small leaves, which are fine textured. And if you can make a combination of those, that's what really makes things pop. Like one of a weaker combination would be daylilies and grasses, because they're too similar. You can strengthen that combination by adding a coarse textured plant in it. And then, of course, color is the last thing. And I don't want to say it's not important, because I love color. And even though it's the most fleeting, I actually do choose my plants by color first oftentimes, because if I do have a theme, like maybe I have a pink garden, it's easier to narrow down my choices by color first. And then I go back and make sure I have enough form and texture to make it successful. So all of those three things in particular are probably the three most important things to think about when you're combining plant materials.
What about season? Because, of course, you have your early bloomers and your late bloomers mm-hmm. and your amazing fall color. Do you think about seasonal changes?
I do. And if you're someone that is definitely a color person, you definitely want to think about seasonal changes. In the summer months and the spring months, if you put a lot of emphasis on form and texture, your garden will always look good whether it's blooming or not. But if you're someone that does want color all year, I do in my own garden think about that. I always want to make sure I have something in the spring and something in the summer and then again something in the fall. So you definitely want to consider mixing the different blooming times. The other thing to think about, of course, is winter interest. You know, things like grasses or berries or interesting bark. But my trick with that is I only do that where it's going to count. So, for instance, if I walk in my front door a lot in the wintertime, I would probably put the winter interest there. Or if I have a back patio that I can view outside French doors or, you know, sliding doors, I would put the winter interest plants there. I wouldn't put them in the back 40 of my lot where I would never see them. So I like to make a punch where it's going to count in plants, you know, so you don't have to do the winter interest everywhere. You do it where it's going to count the most so you can enjoy it.
Now, your most recent post on your webpage is about your recent trip to Disney in Orlando. And of course, the gardens that Disney does are pretty over the top. Mm-hmm. But it does bring up an interesting question because you were contrasting some of their more traditional designs with some of their newer designs, which you describe as salt and pepper. So where the plants are really mixed together. And I think a lot of us have that impulse to have sort of a monoculture. I'll mm-hmm. plant a bed of flowers that all are the same color and all look the same, or I'll plant a row of shrubs that are all the same. Do you think we need to try to break free of that?
You know, to me, it's all about your style. So if you have a home that is something like mid-century modern, a very contemporary home, maybe from the 60s or the 70s or even from the 50s, I think a monocultural planting where it's similar plants, maybe in rows, I think that's perfectly okay for a style like that. The salt and pepper style, which is more of a mixed planting style, is totally different. That salt and pepper style is very similar to a cottage style gardening if you're using perennials. And if you have a more traditional home like a Cape Cod or an older home than that, then definitely more of a cottage style gardening would be better. So for me, it's not a matter of I personally like one over the other. It's more of a, you know, what is the style that you're interested in and what would you like? So when I saw those, you know, you have the typical, oh, I think we're breaking soon. So I'll hold on to that thought.
Okay, perfect. All right, we'll be back in just a moment. I'm talking to Lisa Orgler. She's a landscape designer and a lecturer in the Department of Horticulture at Iowa State University. You can check out some of her designs at lisaorgler.com. Richard Geron will be joining us in just a moment. And, of course, they are here to answer your questions. 866-780-9100. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today, and you are welcome to join the conversation with your questions. The number to call, 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. With me this hour, Lisa Orgler. She's landscape designer and a lecturer in the Department of Horticulture at Iowa State University. And, of course, Richard Geron is also here from Iowa State University Extension. Hello, Richard.
Good morning.
Welcome to the show. And, Lisa, I did interrupt you mid-thought right before the break. We were talking about sort of the monochromatic or the monoculture-type gardens that are very traditional as opposed to a newer approach where things are really mixed up.
Mm-hmm. So that's why I was going to mention that when I was at Disney, you know, they still had, and I was at Epcot in particular, they did have, of course, the monocultural design, still amazing, large scale, you know, drifts of annuals. And it was fun coming across these smaller areas where they would, instead of having these large drifts, they basically pulled the drifts and overlapped them. So they would have this mix of annuals instead. And, you know, I guess we see that in cottage garden styling sometimes with perennials, but I hadn't seen it with annuals, and it was just really fun to see that. And I asked the staff about it, and I said, what is this called? And they said, salt and pepper.
Nice.
Like, that is so fun.
All right. So something else to consider if you're designing this spring. Now, of course, as I mentioned, you can call and join the conversation with your questions, 866-780-9100. Roger is on the line in West Des Moines. Hi, Roger.
Hi. I have a question about, we have a, I think it's called a Norway maple. And it's about 30 or 40 years old. And when the arborist was out a couple of years ago, he said there's a problem with this. He dug down and said it was root bound. And he did some work with it, and he said it might live and it might not. Well, it seems to be doing all right. However, this spring, there's some white mold. It looks like mold on the trunk, and the trunk is, oh, it's probably, it's been trimmed, you know, so it's probably 10 or 12 feet off the ground. And I don't know, is that something to be concerned about? How do I get rid of that white mold or whatever it is?
Now
it
that
might not be mold.
Right.
That's all I can think about.
That white mold material, if you press the area, does it give? Is it soft or maybe kind of mushy?
I think as I'm in Iowa right now, the tree is in Wisconsin.
Okay. Okay. Because
when I was there last week, I think it was soft, but I can't say I really pushed on it, you know, to see.
Okay. Because that may be a wood decay fungus. And that's fairly common where you have rotting wood, you have a wood decay fungus invade that wood, and it begins to rot. And then they produce these structures that tells you there is rot present. So if you have some type of wood rot disease or fungus, there's really nothing you can do. You can't stop it. If you spray it with a fungicide, it doesn't do any good. So basically, you just note that fact. And if the area of rotting continues to grow, then the biggest concern is that it makes the tree structurally unsound, where it becomes so weak that a ice storm or windstorm will destroy the tree. And if the tree is near a home or structure where it would cause serious damage, you have to consider, should I remove the tree or keep it and risk damaging the house or other structure?
Yeah, it's only about 10 or 15 feet from the house, so it definitely would damage. Or if it went the other direction, which it probably wouldn't do, because, let's see, the house is east of the tree, so it probably would be a westerly wind that would throw it into the house. So we maybe need to
so,
look at that.
Right, so the next time you're up there, I would go out to the tree and just wrap it with your knuckles. Go around the trunk, wrap it with your knuckles, and if it's still solid and firm, there's a very distinctive ring. When you come to something that's rotting or soft, there's a different sound. So you can tell what portion of the trunk may be rotting and how much is still intact.
Okay. This mold or whatever you want, fungus, is about probably one-third of around the trunk right now.
That's getting to be quite severe. So that would suggest the tree is pretty weak.
Okay, and that could be because of the way it was root-bound for so many years?
No. Some injury occurred at some point. It may have occurred maybe 5, 10 years ago. Maybe a branch was pruned off maybe 10 or 15 years ago. And when you had that exposed wood, maybe you had the very beginning of some rotting occur. Very, very small initially, and over time it gets bigger and bigger. And so if like one-third of that is affected, then that's not a very sound tree, in my opinion. So the actual decay fungus does not kill the tree. It does not. But it's the weakness that causes the destruction.
Okay. So scraping it off or something like that, scraping it off the bark is not going to do any good then either.
No good at all, no. It's still there. Even though you removed it physically, what you can see, it's still in the wood, causing the wood to decay further. So it's still there.
All right, Roger. Good luck with that. Thanks a lot for your call. You can join the conversation at 866-780-9100. George is up next in Grinnell. Hi, George.
Hey, I've got iris and hostas, and I can't tell you what the other plants are. They usually have flowers, multi-flowers around Memorial Day. Anyway, all three batches of this stuff has to be moved because we're going to take the knob off of the small hill where a big old maple tree is at. So I just stick them in pots and keep them kind of in the shade of another tree until all the earth removal is done, and then replant them again, and they probably won't bloom, right?
Well, that would be my strategy, is dig them up with a nice ball of dirt around the roots of the plant.
Sooner than later?
Sooner than later, and put them in a large pot, put them in the shade out of the wind, and give them some water periodically, and as soon as you can, get them back in the ground. Now, for example, if they're peonies, they typically would bloom in late May. And since they're out of the ground, if they're out of the ground and they try to form flower buds, simply cut them off. Because they take a lot of energy from that plant. And you want them to put all their energy into their survival, not their flower buds.
The peony plants look a little bit on the wimpy side. They're kind of in an area where there's a lot of broom grass and too much competition.
Okay.
So the sooner the better. Supposedly the earth mover is coming in first part of June. We just as well get them moved now.
Right. They can stay in pots. They can stay in pots for quite some time. Just make sure they're nice big pots, and they can stay in there for quite some time. And I would do it now because the bigger they get, it's going to be harder for them to survive that digging up. So I would do it as soon as you can.
The snowball bush that needs to be trimmed back, do I do that now or after the snowballs are done?
I would be inclined to do it now, actually. And I'm thinking long term. I want the plant to survive. So I would do it now.
Okay. Thank you.
All right, George, thanks a lot for your call. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Here's an email from Jody. I live in central Iowa, and in my backyard, I have a steep bank about 10 feet tall that ends into water. The soil is mostly clay and gets full sun all day. At times, the soil is moist near the bottom but dry near the top. What would be the best low-maintenance ground cover or plants that would help with erosion and tolerate clay soil and full sun?
I'm thinking possibly of two different things. One would be daylilies. They're very low maintenance, and I would probably plant one of the repeat blooming varieties that bloom for maybe 10, 11, 12 weeks, something like Stella de Ora, a very common one, Happy Returns. There are a number of those. And then I would mulch between the plants. And over time, they'll fill in, so it's like a real thick grass, almost like plant material. So that would be an option. Another option would be some of the ornamental grasses that you could put in there, and some native ones, too. You could put in, for example, maybe a little blue stem or feather reed grass, something of that nature.
All right. And, you know, talking about the clay soil brings up an interesting question when planning your landscape, too. Lisa, earlier when we were talking about designing your garden or designing your landscape, of course, a lot of people with newer homes have to do this from scratch, and they may not have the best soil quality. Is that something you need to check out before you plan that garden?
Yes, I would. And if you're lucky enough to be the person building the house, I would make sure you work with the contractor to make sure any topsoil stays or comes back to your site when you're done. That's really important. A lot of people will do raised beds if they need to in certain areas, but you obviously can't have raised beds in your entire yard. But raised beds are one way that you can handle certain areas. If you're growing vegetables, at least, or maybe you have special annual beds or perennial beds, you could do some raised beds in certain areas too if you aren't lucky enough to have the really nice soils.
Right, and that loss of topsoil through construction, I know that's caused a lot of people a lot of frustration over the years, thinking, why can't I grow anything here?
Mm-hmm. Unfortunately. And, you know, at Ryman Gardens at Iowa State, you know, that they are a great example of what happens when the topsoil is stripped away, because a lot of the topsoil from that site was taken away and used for the berms on either side of the football stadium many years ago, before Ryman Gardens was even an idea. Exactly. So it's no one's fault. So at Ryman Gardens, you will see a lot of raised beds and a lot of they've had to deal with that. The bad soils in many ways. So that's actually a great place to go to look to see the different things that they've done.
All right, and get some good ideas. Mm-hmm. Here is an email question from Kevin. Do you have any suggestions for shrubs that rabbits won't like? Rabbits came out in force this winter, destroying a very old juniper and doing serious damage to yews, all of which had never received visible rabbit damage before. And his second question is, can anything be done for shrubs and hedges that have serious bark damage from rabbits?
Well, it's hard as far as rabbits are concerned, because if there are quite a few in an area, and if they're hungry, they'll eat virtually anything. So it's hard to plant something that is rabbit-proof. The nice thing about shrubs is they're multi-stemmed, and if they do destroy many of those stems, they simply send up new ones. A tree typically doesn't do that very well, but shrubs do. So the shrubs should come back. They've been badly damaged, but they should come back eventually.
Well, that's very good news. And, how about things that rabbits don't like?
Well, as far as there are some perennials that they don't like. For example, they do not like daffodils. They will eat tulips. They love tulips. So there are some perennials that they tend to ignore. But during the growing season, they have so many options. They can eat the grass. They can eat the weeds. So many options. In the wintertime, they have very few options. And those shrubs that stick above the snow, they're really nice targets for the rabbits.
All right. Very, very tempting. Well, hopefully they make a good comeback. Let's go back to the phones. Don is on the line in Gilmore City. Hi, Don.
Hello.
What's your question? Yeah.
Yeah, my question is, I've got a spirea bush that was planted about 40 years ago. Well, there's several of them. And they've never really been trimmed back. They've been trimmed back a little bit right next to a door, and they always come back, but there's getting to be probably about 2.5 feet of basically dead brush down at the bottom and then bushes up from there. Can I cut that back further?
What kind of flowers do they have, white ones or pink ones?
Little white ones.
Little white ones. And how big is the plant itself when it's mature? Like 4 feet, 6 feet?
Yeah, it's the bush itself is probably about 4 to 5 feet tall.
Okay.
And it sticks away from the building probably another 4 or 5 feet.
Okay. The nice thing about spireas is they're almost indestructible. That's nice. I mean... So you can prune them back severely, and they'll come right back. So if you're going to do that, I would do it as soon as possible, and I'd probably cut them back to within like 3 to 4 inches of the ground.
All right. Would it be better to wait until next year and do it probably in like February, March, before anything is...
Well, I think you can still do it if you wish to do it. You can still do it. They're pretty resilient. Ideally, you'd probably do this maybe in late March, okay, before they start to leaf out. But you could still do it. They're very resilient. They're very tough. So, but you don't want to wait and do it maybe in 3 or 4 weeks.
Okay.
All right, Don, thanks a lot for your call. Next up, Luann in Cedar Rapids. Hi, Luann.
Hi. We have had several ash trees removed in our condo area. And we were wondering what type of trees would be, you know, good to replace them with.
Well, I would kind of do an inventory. What do I currently have? And then I probably would try to find something different, you know, add some diversity to the landscape. So I would definitely look at things like maples.
Mm-hmm.
For example, the sugar maples would be nice. Mm-hmm. Maybe some of the Freeman maples, which are hybrids between the silver maple and red maple. I would look at some of the oaks, like the red oak, for example. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
I would look at some of the lindens, either the American linden or the little leaf linden. I would look at things like maybe honey locust, Kentucky coffee tree. So all those different trees. Would be possible.
Coffee trees have seeds?
Well, right. There are, the coffee tree does produce a fairly large pod, about maybe 3 to 5 inches in length, kind of a dark purple. But the fortunate thing is they do have cultivars that are basically podless. They don't produce the pods. And so you can find those. So I would just kind of look at what I've got and maybe try to add some diversity to it.
Yeah. What is a good thing for the Austrian pine? We have several large ones that are dying, in clumps of evergreens,
right.
Other evergreens beside them. And then they're such a shame, but, they are dying. They have that rust. Isn't it a rust that they get?
They have a disease, a fungal disease. Our choices on the evergreens are much smaller. I would look at things like white pine, concolor or white fir, and Norway spruce. They're the best.
All right. Thanks a lot for your call, Lou Ann. We'll be back after a short break. It's Horticulture Day on Talk of Iowa. With me, Iowa State University Extension horticulturist Richard Giron and Lisa Orgler, landscape designer and a lecturer in the Department of Horticulture at Iowa State University. You can join the conversation with your questions at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk, or you can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today. With me, Lisa Orgler, landscape designer and a lecturer in the Department of Horticulture at Iowa State University. Iowa State University Extension horticulturist Richard Giron is here, and you can join the conversation too. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. Wilma is on the line in Ankeny. Hi, Wilma.
Hello. Good morning.
Hi. What's your question?
Well, I live in a townhouse in Ankeny, Iowa, and I do container gardening. And each year I plant annuals in the containers. And then in the fall, of course, when they are dead, I pull them out.
Mm-hmm.
And usually the container is half full of potting soil.
Mm-hmm.
Can I just leave that potting soil in there and then put a little new on top, or do I have to empty all the containers?
Ideally, I would add fresh every year and dump the stuff in the fall. Now, if cost is a factor and you want to economize, then I would say maybe half and half. Half fresh, half old. And try to go with that. The reason being that
some of the roots remain in there.
Yeah. The reason is that the potting mix, the longer it stays, it kind of begins to break down. It doesn't have the same desirable qualities eventually. So you want to have the best growing conditions possible.
Yes. All right. Well, thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you so much for your call. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. And Lisa, we've got a stumper for you. This is from Margaret. She says, my husband and I live in a house with an awful front yard. It slopes toward the house. There are no sidewalks and the road is not paved in front. In turn, we have very rocky soil up there and grass refuses to grow because of two giant maple trees that are on either side of the yard. I have dreams of putting up a retaining wall for a nice level flower bed and a path from the driveway to the front door for guests, but I don't even know where to start.
Where do I start? Of course, with any design, it's easier to see it, but I would have to agree with her. A wall sounds actually kind of nice to level it out, but if you, I don't know how large that space is. One thing you can look into is some kind of there's this new technique for planting. It's called matrix planting, and it's actually similar to the salt and pepper, where you have a dominant plant like a grass, let's just say, and since we live in the prairie, it can be a prairie grass, and then you dot in other plants. It's almost like a prairie planting, but it's not. You actually can use non-native plants in this type of planting too. Roy Diblick, which is D-I-B-L-I-K, he is a landscape designer from Wisconsin, and he uses this technique, and that might be something fun to try in a yard that you can't grow grass. Now, if you do want grass, obviously, then I agree. Then maybe the best bet would be to work with a local landscape designer and work with them to make sure that maybe just work with the local landscape designer and have them help you look at a plan possibly so they can actually see the yard and give you the best options. Another thing to be cautious about is you want to make sure you don't raise the grade or lower the grade around the existing trees. So if you do have, I think she said maples.
Right.
To be cautious about that. So if you do walls, you have to be cautious that you're not raising the grade around the trees or lowering it also or cutting into the root system, I should say it that way. So you have to be cautious about that too, which is why I'm always cautious to give answers without actually seeing the site.
Right.
But I would encourage her to work with a local landscape designer or a local landscape company and have them help her with that because there's some really fun things you could do with a yard like that. I think it's just a matter of visiting the site and having the right person look at it.
Well, and it sounds like it's really overwhelming because she's thinking about major construction when she's thinking about putting in a retaining wall and possibly bringing in, I would guess, a lot of soil to even things out.
Correct. That's a lot of work. So another option would be is do you need to have the lawn in the first place? Maybe there's other options with another kind of really neat planting design that you can do in the front yard and then maybe have the lawn in the backyard instead. I always look at lawn as – I love lawn. So I always look at it as if you're going to have lawn, can you use it in a functional way? If you're not going to really use the lawn for playing ball or having a picnic, then maybe you can use other plant materials instead and then put the lawn in the backyard instead where you would do those things. I mean, if she truly wants to use the level space for something, but I think you can have a nice garden without maybe putting in a lot of walls if you don't want to spend the money. But again, I haven't seen the site, so it's hard to – there might be some amazing options that you can do with the site depending on what it looks like.
All right, but don't get discouraged. That's
correct.
What I'm hearing.
Yeah, correct. Yeah, there's you can find a lot of positives in a lot of sites that you may think are negative. And I think it just takes maybe having the right person look at it to help you see that.
All right. Let's go back to the phones. Jason is on the line in Des Moines. Hi, Jason.
Hi. I've got a question about peonies. You said earlier they can be dug up and held in a large pot for quite a while. How long could they stay in a pot?
Up to a year or more, possibly.
Now you would
have to overwinter them. You could do that by simply sticking the pots in the ground and then digging them back up in the spring. But you could have the plants in a pot for quite some time.
Okay. But overwintering them would be required if they couldn't go back into the ground before.
Right. If
you hold again. Okay.
Right. If you have plants in pots and they stay above the ground over winter, they could very well winter kill. And that's because the soil temperatures get so cold, it destroys the plants. But if you set them in the ground, they're surrounded by all that soil, they stay much warmer.
I see. And then every year, so I've had these peonies have been transferred through my family for a long time, and they seem to do fine. They bloom out every year, and the foliage looks good. But they get these brown dots on them all over, and I know, I assume it's affecting the plant, and it's really ugly more than anything. Is that, do you know what that is or how I would get rid of it?
It's some type of foliar disease, I'm sure. And so the first thing that I would do is in the fall of the year, cut them back to the ground and remove that debris from the area and destroy it. So get rid of that dead debris, because if you don't, it's going to reinfect the next year's foliage. So get rid of it.
Okay.
The other possibility would be making sure it has a very favorable site where it has very good air circulation and plenty of sun, because these foliar diseases tend to be more common where you have more shade and maybe not very good air circulation. So maybe moving it to a better site might be an option too.
Okay. Awesome. Well, thanks for the help.
Yeah, Jason, thanks a lot for your call. Next up, we've got Margaret in Stanley. Hi, Margaret.
Hi there. Again, you guys have more fun on this show than any other show I listen to all day. So I am working in my flower garden, and the ground is working up so nice. Can I put annual seeds in now? Because they aren't going to come up for a couple weeks. Is that a possibility?
I'm just trying to think. I think I would probably delay that for maybe another week or 10 days. Being Iowa, it was just 20 degrees a couple nights ago. So,
it's true.
So I think I'd be inclined to wait maybe another week or 10 days before doing that. And you could You could sow seeds of marigolds and zinnias and things like that, but I'd wait a few more days, I think.
Okay. All right, I'll do it. All right, thanks. Have a good day.
Yep, thank you. And Richard, that is so funny because, of course, we've had these beautiful couple of days, and I think that we are just sort of terminally optimistic people.
Well, you know, it was just 20 degrees, 21 degrees a couple of nights ago, so things can change, but they can also go the other direction again, so.
It's true. All right. Lynn is on the line next in Ames. Hi, Lynn.
Hi there. I have two questions. I wondered if I could fertilize my daffodils, and if so, what I would use for that. And the other one is that I would like to prepare an area for planting some flowers, and it's covered with the weed that has the little tiny blue flowers. And how do I get rid of those? And
is that Creeping Charlie that you're talking about?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Could be. That's my guess. As far as the daffodils, I don't think fertilization is really that beneficial, but make sure they allow them to die back on their own. Once they're done blooming, the foliage remains for like 4, 5, 6 weeks. And basically what that foliage is doing is recharging the batteries of the bulbs, basically. That's what they're doing. Because when they're blooming, they're kind of weak. They have used up all the stored food in the bulb, and so they need to get ready for next year. So just allow them to go ahead and die back naturally. Don't cut them back. Even though they may look a little bit rough later on, just leave them until they're totally dead. And as far as the other question was?
Preparing the area that has...
Okay, the ground ivy.
Creepy Charlie.
Yeah. The good news on that is that Creeping Charlie or ground ivy does not have a deep root system. So you should be able to go out there with a hoe or some other device and simply hoe the area, work up the soil. And then if you do that, then very carefully kind of remove that plant debris because it does have the ability to re-root if you just leave it there laying on the ground. So I would rake it off or whatever, get rid of that plant debris, and then maybe come back in a couple of weeks and do it again to make sure it's totally dead, and then go ahead and plant your annual plants.
All right, Lynn, thanks a lot for your call. Next up, let's go to David in Mason City. Hi, David.
Good morning.
Hi, what's your question?
I have a question. We have a large amount of towering mature oak trees, and this spring when I was out sweeping, I seem to be picking up an inordinate or unusual amount of twigs that have fallen out of the trees. We have a pretty good squirrel population, but I'm wondering if it's something that I should be concerned about, or maybe it was the high winds during the winter.
How big are the twigs?
They're about maybe a little finger-wise, usually about that size, not really big. But
so maybe like 6 inches, maybe 6 inches or maybe a foot in length?
Yeah, the vast majority of them are probably 6-8 inches long.
Right. I would check the end of the branch. I'm assuming that was squirrels. They tend to do that. They do it in my trees, I know. So they will cut down quite a few little branches. And typically, if you examine the end, you can see they've been chewed off. And that confirms what you're seeing. But they'll do that quite a bit. Sometimes you go out on certain days and there'll be quite a few. Other days, nothing, but they do it fairly often.
Yeah,
and it's not going to hurt the tree, really. They're just doing some minor pruning. It's kind of annoying to have to go out there and pick up the twigs, but they're typically not causing serious damage to the tree.
Yeah, I use my sweeper, and I pick up probably, 15 bushels full of these twigs. I just wondered if it was by the squirrels. Usually they cut to chew them off when there's leaves on them to get ready for the nest, but I just wondered if that was a sign of oak wilt or whether it was just high wind and hungry squirrels.
Just squirrels that may have a behavioral problem. I'm not sure.
Behavioral problem. They're just squirrels being squirrels.
Yes.
All right, David. Thanks a lot for your call. And how nice to not diagnose an oak tree with oak wilt for once. Martha is on the line next in Washington County. Hi, Martha.
Hi. My husband and I are taking advantage of
a deal with the State Forest Nursery in Ryman Gardens that's promoting butterfly and bird habitat. And we have coming the last week of this month, we're going to be getting 250 shrubs. We're going to be getting 50 each of chokecherry, arrowwood, aronia berry, radosier dogwood, and the bonus is 59 bark. So my question is, the most important things about preparing the ground, the distance between, and storing them in the event that the weather's bad and we can't get them in the ground right away.
Well, as far as storage, I'm assuming those are bare root.
Right.
And basically what you want to do is, if you can't plant those immediately, the first thing I would do is check the plants themselves. They typically put some type of packing material around the roots, like wood shavings. And if there, if there are things around the roots, make sure that material is moist. Okay? You don't want the roots to dry out. So if you examine the plants, if that packing material is getting dry, go ahead and moisten it, re-moisten it, and then put the plants back in a cool place. Maybe a shed, a garage where it's nice and cool. That way they'll stay dormant. Okay? A warm place, they're going to start to leaf out. You want them to stay dormant. So put them in a cool place. If you had a cooler, that would be great. If you had a cave, that would be great. But a nice, cool location. And then as far as the spacing, it kind of depends. Some of the shrubs you mentioned may get to be, let's say, 8 foot tall. Others could get to be quite a bit bigger. So it kind of depends upon their mature size. And most shrubs, if they grow 8 foot tall, tend to spread 8 foot wide. So keep that in mind as far as spacing.
Okay.
Sounds like you have a lot of work ahead of you, Martha. Good luck with that.
Oh, yeah. Tools. What tools do I want to make sure I have on hand?
Tools, basically shovels, spades. That's what you need.
Okay.
All right, and maybe some friends, too.
Yes.
Oh, yeah, I'm getting that lined up.
Yeah.
And watering cans or buckets or hoses, something to water these, because as soon as they're planted, they need to be watered.
Right. Okay. Some areas, there's quite a bit of clay in the soil. Should I be too concerned about that?
Well, basically, what comes out of the hole goes back in the hole. If it's a poor soil, they're going to have to adjust, and it's best they start right off the bat. If you amend the soil, it may actually discourage the plant from really growing. So,
interesting. All right. Well, good luck with that, Martha. I hope you have a lot of success. And we're almost out of time, so I've got a couple quick email questions. This is from Fran. We have a Honeycrisp apple tree we planted approximately 5 years ago. It has never had fruit or blossoms. We do have a Jonathan apple that regularly has apples. What could the problem be?
It still probably is an age issue. When you plant a fruit tree like an apple tree, they typically start flowering usually in 4 or 5 years, but it could be a few years later. So I would still say it's a maturity issue.
Okay, patience.
That it should start to bloom fairly soon.
All right. And of course, that by soon you mean in
within
the next
year or two,
yes. Right? So long range soon. And Lisa's question is, what is the best mulch or weed blocker for a rose garden? If mulch, what kind and how thick?
Well, I would use typically wood chips myself. And I like those because they're more persistent. And there are various types that you can find. They vary in color. So find something you like, something on sale, and apply about 2 or 3 inches.
All right. Great. Richard Giron, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Iowa State University Extension horticulturist Richard Giron. Lisa Orgler, thank you.
Thank you very much.
Lisa Orgler is a landscape designer and a lecturer in the Department of Horticulture at Iowa State University. And you can see some of her designs in her blog at lisaorgler.com. We'll be back with Horticulture Day again next Friday on Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio.